Have you ever noticed how a particular scent can just, boom, instantly bring back a flood of memories, you know, transport you right back to a specific moment?
Oh, absolutely. Or how one specific flavor makes a product totally unique, like utterly unforgettable, maybe even defines the whole brand for you.
Exactly. And we experience these sensory cues every single day, right? Mm. Often without giving them a second thought.
Yeah, they're just there. Part of our lives.
Influencing our choices, our perceptions, even our emotions, but subtly.
And behind these, well, these ubiquitous everyday experiences are these global powerhouses like Symrise AG. They're, you know, essentially the unseen architects of our sensory world, meticulously crafting what we smell, what we taste, even the stuff we put on our bodies.
So they're fundamental to how we perceive so many products.
Absolutely. Shaping our preferences, our loyalties, day in, day out.
Indeed. And that unseen part, that's what makes their business so fascinating, I think. So our mission for this deep dive, really, is to uncover the business model of Symrise. We're going to explore how this company, one that maybe many of you haven't even heard of, has quietly become such a huge player in this, well, specialized, but incredibly impactful industry.
We'll definitely dig into their secret sauce, as you called it, understand how they build these exceptionally sticky relationships with some of the world's biggest brands.
And also look at how they're navigating some major shifts, you know, in the global economy and the competitive landscape. It's changing fast.
It really is.
So you'll walk away from this deep dive with a real shortcut, hopefully, to understanding a company that quite literally shapes our daily sensory experiences.
Let's get into it.
Okay, let's start by painting a picture of Symrise itself. What is this company? At its core, Symrise is a German-headquartered global powerhouse.
Right. That's right. Headquartered in Germany, but truly global.
And it's deeply ingrained in, well, the fabric of consumer goods, even if its name isn't on the packaging you see.
Exactly. You won't find Symrise on the supermarket shelf directly. They're not selling, you know, bottles of perfume or packets of spices to you and me.
No, they're providing the essence, right? The fragrance, the flavor, the active ingredient that goes into those products.
Precisely. Their core offerings are incredibly diverse, but they all revolve around sensory and functional experiences. So we're talking fragrances for your shampoo or detergent.
You're telling them smell appealing.
Exactly. Flavorings that make your food and drinks delicious.
Uh-huh.
Cosmetic active ingredients for your skincare, things that actually do something.
Right, performance ingredients.
And functional nutrition solutions, too, adding health benefits to various consumer goods.
Wow. And they have a massive portfolio, something like 35,000 products?
Over 35,000 products. It's astonishing.
So their creations are integral components in just a huge array of consumer goods.
Indispensable, really, to everyday life for billions of people. Mm. Think about the unique tang in a salad dressing or the smell of a certain soap or even making kids' toothpaste taste okay.
Huh, yes, crucial work there.
It's truly remarkable how foundational they are, yet they remain largely behind the scenes. And their scale, well, it really underscores this quiet dominance.
How big are we talking?
The modern company, as we know it today, was formed back in 2003. It was a merger of two long-standing players, Harman & Reimer and Dragoco.
Okay.
And their roots go way back, actually, to 1874, so deep history there.
Wow.
They went public with an IPO in 2006, and today they're a key part of Germany's main stock index, the DAX.
So like Germany's Dow Jones or FTSE 100 equivalent?
Exactly. It signals their scale and stability within the German economy. Being in the DAX is a big deal.
And financially, what kind of revenue are we looking at?
In fiscal year 2024, their revenues were around 5.0 billion euros.
Okay. Substantial.
Very substantial. And they're truly global. Over 12,700 employees operated in more than 100 locations worldwide.
100 locations?
Yeah. And that footprint lets them serve over 6,000 clients across more than 150 countries.
That's just staggering reach for a company most consumers never interact with directly.
It really is.
You mentioned that B2B focus, business to business, which makes them kind of invisible to us, the end consumers. But in an industry that's so built on brand loyalty at our level, how does Symrise, as this behind-the-scenes player, build its own brand identity? How do they get sticky with these massive clients? Is it just about having the best flavor?
That's a really good question, because it's precisely at that B2B level where Symrise's stickiness really comes into play. They partner directly with some of the world's largest FMCG companies, fast-moving consumer goods.
Right, the big household names.
Exactly, and major food manufacturers, cosmetic brands, you name it. The process usually starts when one of these clients comes to Symrise with what they call a brief.
A brief, like a design brief.
Sort of. It's a highly detailed request. It outlines exactly what they need for a new flavor or a new fragrance or maybe a specific functional ingredient for a new product launch or even just improving an old one.
Yeah.
It might specify, you know, the target consumer, the desired smell or taste profile, maybe even regulatory limits.
Okay, very specific.
It's very specific. And then Symrise puts its massive creative and scientific teams to work. They develop many different versions of the requested formulation, sometimes over 100 variations.
100, wow.
Each one crafted and tested meticulously. It's a highly iterative, very specialized creative process, almost like bespoke tailoring, but for senses.
Right.
Then, once the client's internal experts test everything rigorously and pick a winner, that specific Symrise formulation gets core listed.
Core listed. Okay, what does that mean exactly?
It means that that specific Symrise formula becomes an integral part of that end product for its entire life cycle.
The whole time it's on the market.
Exactly. It's embedded. It's like part of the product's DNA, really.
Mm-hmm.
And this core listed system, well, that's their absolute sweet spot in the value chain.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads directly to what we call those sticky relationships.
Ah, okay. So the stickiness comes from being embedded.
Precisely. Think about it. The ingredient Symrise provides that specific scent in your detergent or the unique flavor in your snack. They typically represent a tiny fraction of the end product's total cost.
How tiny?
Often just 1% to 5%. Almost negligible from a cost perspective.
Okay.
However, and this is the fascinating part, despite that low cost, the flavor or the fragrance is often the primary driver of why you, the consumer, buy it. And why you stay loyal to that brand.
Right. That smell, that taste, that's what you recognize.
Exactly. It makes you reach for that specific brand again and again. It creates an emotional connection, recognition.
So that gives Symrise leverage.
Significant pricing power. Yeah. They're not selling a commodity like, you know, generic vanilla extract. They're selling the magic that makes a product stand out. This insulates them from commoditization because their value isn't just volume. It's uniqueness and consumer appeal.
That dynamic small cost, massive value driver, that's really interesting. It almost sounds like they have their clients, well, not over a barrel, but in a very strong position. What are the practical implications of these high switching costs? Does it let them invest more confidently, maybe?
It leads to exceptionally high switching costs, yes. And absolutely, it impacts their strategic freedom, their ability to plan long term. Once a specific Symrise flavor or fragrance is core listed into a really successful consumer product. Think about a globally recognized soda or a top-selling shampoo that millions use.
Right, something huge.
Changing the supplier becomes incredibly difficult and commercially very risky.
Why is that? Is it just technically hard?
Well, the technical side is complex, yes. You'd have to reformulate, retest, maybe get new regulatory approvals, adjust production lines. It's a major R&D effort. But more importantly, there's enormous commercial risk.
How so?
You could fundamentally change the sensory profile that consumers know and trust. You risk alienating millions of loyal customers.
Yeah.
You could literally jeopardize a multi-million or even multi-billion dollar brand.
They changed the formula. Backlash.
Exactly. That consumer reaction, this doesn't taste right anymore,
mm-hmm.
or this smells different, is a huge deterrent for brand managers.
I see. So that creates
very sticky, very long-term customer relationships. It provides Symrise with a highly predictable, recurring revenue stream, almost like an annuity.
And that predictability.
That predictability and stability certainly allows them to make more confident long-term investments in R&D, in innovation, in strategic acquisitions. They know a large chunk of their base revenue is pretty secure.
That's a powerful competitive moat, really durable.
It truly is.
That's genuinely remarkable. It really highlights how integral they are, even if we don't see their name.
Now, their operations are also strategically divided into two main business segments, right?
Yep.
And they're designed to be synergistic.
That's right. Two key segments.
The first and the largest one is taste, nutrition, and health.
Right.
TNNH, they call it.
TNNH, yes. This segment brought in nearly 3 billion euros in sales in 2023, 2,978 million specifically. And this is where you find what? The flavors, natural ingredients, health solutions.
Exactly. A comprehensive range designed to enhance the appeal, the taste, and the functional benefits of food and beverage products.
And the end markets are huge here, right? Culinary, snacks, dairy, sweets, drinks.
Everything from savory to sweet, yes. And also, importantly, the rapidly growing pet food sector.
Ah, pet food. So they're making sure our furry friends enjoy their dinner, too.
Absolutely. They specialize in what are called palatability enhancers for pet food. making it taste good to the animal.
That explains why my dog is obsessed with one particular brand. Maybe Symrise is involved.
It's quite possible. They hold leading positions in culinary applications, beverages, and definitely in pet food palatability.
Okay, so that's TNNH. What's the other segment?
The other segment is Scent and Care, or S&C. This one generated about $1.75 billion in sales in 2023. $1,752 million. S&C focuses on the sensory and functional aspects beyond taste.
So smells and skin stuff.
Pretty much. They develop and produce captivating fragrances for perfumes, personal care items. They also make innovative cosmetic ingredients that improve skin health or appearance, and specialized aroma molecules.
Aroma molecules, yeah. Like the building blocks of scents.
Exactly. Within S&C, you've got key areas like fine fragrances, that's your high-end luxury perfumes.
Yeah.
Then consumer fragrances covering scents in everyday things like shampoos, soaps, detergents, air fresheners.
Right.
And oral care, the flavors in toothpaste, mouthwash. S&C is actually a market leader in several high-value niches here.
Like what?
Things like oral care ingredients, specific aroma molecules like musk and menthol, microprotection technologies for products, and even sophisticated sun protection filters. Shows their chemical expertise.
So these two segments, TNNH and S&C, they're not just separate silos operating independently. You mentioned synergy.
Correct. They're designed to work together. The structure, which they actually updated back in April 2021, was intentionally set up to better align with how customer needs are evolving and also to capitalize on operational overlaps.
Overlaps like shared ingredients or production?
Yeah, things like shared raw materials or production processes that can be optimized across both segments. That brings economies of scale, cost efficiencies.
Makes sense.
But maybe more importantly, this synergistic approach lets them offer more integrated solutions to clients.
Integrated how? Give me an example.
Okay, imagine a client wants to launch a new line of functional beverages. They want it to taste great, obviously, but maybe they also want it to contain ingredients that promote healthy skin.
Ah, like beauty from within.
Exactly. Symrise can bring expertise from both TNNH for the taste and the nutritional aspects, and from S&C for their knowledge of skin biology and cosmetic ingredients. They create a holistic solution.
So it's about leveraging their collective brain power across the board.
Precisely. Meeting these complex, multifaceted customer briefs that increasingly demand both sensory appeal and functional benefits, all in one package.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk about Symrise's strategic differentiators. This is where that secret sauce really comes in, I think. Innovation seems absolutely relentless for them. It's not just talk.
No, it's deeply embedded. They invest heavily, over 8% of their annual revenue back into R&D.
And the results speak for themselves, right? Something like 15% of annual sales from new products.
That's the figure. Approximately 15% of sales come from products launched within just the last 3 years.
That's incredible. It really tells you about the vitality of their R&D engine.
It does. It shows they're not just reacting to trends. They're constantly creating, adapting, bringing fresh ideas to market that resonate with clients and consumers. Crucial in this industry.
And a core part of that innovation, something you mentioned really sets them apart, is this backward integration strategy.
Yes, backward integration. This is a critical strategic differentiator, especially now.
Define that for us again. What does backward integration mean here?
It means Symrise is increasingly taking control over the sourcing of its key natural raw materials. In an age where consumers are demanding more natural, transparent, sustainably sourced ingredients, the whole clean label movement.
Right. People want to know where things come from.
Exactly. So this backward integration isn't just a nice to have. It's become a competitive imperative. It actually wins them business.
Can you give some specific examples? How deep does this integration go?
It was quite deep. For instance, they manage this extensive network of about 7,000 farmers in Madagascar.
7,000 farmers? For what?
For vanilla, ensuring a stable, high-quality, and sustainable supply of one of the world's most vital and often most volatile natural flavors.
Wow. So it's not just buying on the open market.
No, it's a long-term partnership. It includes training for the farmers, fair pricing agreements, community development projects. They have similar long-term programs for sourcing mint in India, and various botanicals for the Brazilian Amazon.
Okay, so this isn't just about securing supply. You said it serves a dual purpose. What's the other side?
Well, the first purpose is definitely greater control over supply, quality, cost. It helps mitigate the volatility you see in agricultural commodities due to weather, geopolitics, you name it. Builds resilience.
Right. Less exposure to market swings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the second purpose, and this is arguably more important now for their competitive edge, is that it's become a really powerful competitive tool.
It's so
Major FMCG customers, those big brands, are under immense pressure from consumers, from regulators, from their own ESG goals to prove their supply chains are sustainable and traceable.
Right, they need that story.
Precisely. So Symrise's ability to provide fully documented, responsibly sourced natural ingredients to literally tell the story of that vanilla bean from that specific farm in Madagascar all the way to the factory.
That becomes a huge selling point.
And an incredibly compelling value proposition. It helps Symrise win new business briefs against competitors who might just be buying ingredients off the open market with less transparency. It transforms them from just a supplier into an indispensable strategic partner for these clients.
And creates a barrier to entry for others.
A significant barrier to entry. Competitors who can't match that depth of supply chain integration and the trust it builds are at a disadvantage.
So this backward integration, it's not just logistics. It's fundamentally about meeting these massive consumer megatrends. Sustainability, traceability, naturalness.
Absolutely.
Being able to tell that story, prove it was done responsibly, that's huge value for their clients. And it must build Symrise's own brand reputation too, even B2B.
It absolutely does. It transforms a logistical strength into a profound strategic advantage. It connects their operations directly to what the end market is demanding.
Okay, let's zoom out now and look at the whole flavors and fragrances industry, the F&F space. It's not exactly a small niche market, is it?
Far from it. The global F&F market is pretty substantial. Estimates put it somewhere between 30 and 40 billion U.S. dollars for 2024-2025.
Wow, that's bigger than the global music industry, I think.
It's comparable, yeah. And it's not just big, it's growing steadily. Projections are for a compound annual growth rate, CAGR, of maybe 3.7% to 5.4% through 2030.
And what drives that growth? Is it tied to the economy?
What's crucial here is that the demand drivers are highly non-cyclical. People always need food, drinks, soap, toothpaste, right?
Sure.
Regardless of economic ups and downs.
Sure. Basic necessities.
So factors like global population growth, rising disposable incomes, especially in emerging economies in Asia, Africa, Latin America, that consistently fuels demand for processed foods, convenience items, and more sophisticated personal care products. It's a very resilient industry.
And the structure of this industry is quite specific, isn't it? Not wide open competition.
No, it's highly concentrated. It's what economists call an oligopoly, a market dominated by just a few large sellers.
The big four.
Exactly. The four largest players, Yvodan, International Flavors and Fragrances, IFF, the new DSM Fermentic entity in Symrise, together they controlled over 60% of the entire market back in 2022.
Over 60% between just four companies.
Yes. And this consolidated structure gives these incumbents huge advantages. Immense scale for global supply chains and R&D budgets.
Deep R&D capabilities to create those 35,000 products.
Superior purchasing power for raw materials.
Global reach to serve multinational clients.
All of these create formidable barriers to entry. You can't just start an F&F company in your garage and expect to compete globally.
So who are these big four, and how does Symrise stack up against them in this oligopoly?
Okay, at the very top, the undisputed market leader is Yvodan. They're based in Switzerland. They hold around 25% market share. Their 2024 sales were about 7.4 billion Swiss francs, which is roughly 7.8 billion euros.
So the benchmark.
Definitely the benchmark. They often command the highest valuations due to their size and consistent performance.
And then there's the big new player, DSM Fermentic. That merger really shook things up, right?
It really did. DSM Fermentic is a new giant formed in May 2023. It brought together DSM Strong in Health, Nutrition, Bioscience, and Fermentic, a long-standing leader in perfumery and taste.
A powerful combination.
Absolutely. It created a formidable competitor, especially strong in those high-growth functional ingredients, where health benefits meet sensory appeal. Before the merger, Fermentec alone had about 11% market share, so the combined entity is a major force.
Okay, then there's the big U.S. player, International Flavors and Fragrances, IFF. They also made a huge move recently.
They did. IFF significantly increased their scale back in 2021 by acquiring DuPont's Nutrition and Biosciences division. A massive deal.
So they're number two, roughly.
In 2022, IFF held about 22% market share. But it's important to note, they faced some significant challenges integrating that huge acquisition. Issues like higher debt, integration complexity, supply chain problems. It's impacted their recent performance and valuation.
Right, integrations are tough. Which brings us back to Symrise. Where do they fit in this picture?
Symrise is the clear number four player in this global oligopoly, holding an estimated market share of around 12%.
Okay, and what's their strategy in this context? Play it safe.
No, their stated strategy is ambitious. Consistently outperform the underlying market growth, which is usually 3-4% per year. They aim to achieve this through a mix of organic innovation like we discussed, that constant stream of new products, and targeted, disciplined acquisitions to bolster specific capabilities.
So they're aiming for growth above the market average.
Yes. Their long-term ambition is organic growth in the 5-7% range, which clearly signals they intend to keep gaining market share over time. And these recent big mergers, IFF buying DuPont N&B, and especially the creation of DS and Firmenich, they've really altered the competitive dynamics. It's shifted the game.
How so? What's the new battlefield?
It's no longer just about who creates the best taste or the most captivating scent, though that's still crucial, of course. The new competitive battleground is increasingly about delivering integrated solutions. Meaning combining that sensory appeal, the taste, the smell, with scientifically validated functional benefits. Things like proven health effects, better texture in food, enhanced sustainability profiles.
So a client wants a drink that tastes great, boosts immunity, and uses traceable natural ingredients.
Exactly. That's the kind of complex brief they're getting more and more. And this shift puts pressure on all the players to broaden their capabilities beyond traditional F&F expertise. They need knowledge in bioscience, nutrition, digital analytics, the whole package.
So it's blending science and consumer needs much more holistically. And I imagine regulations must add another layer of complexity here.
A huge layer. The F&F and cosmetic ingredients industries operate under a very complex, very stringent global regulatory framework. You've got rules from the FDA in the US, EFSA in Europe, national bodies everywhere, covering safety, labeling, ingredient usage.
Must be a nightmare to navigate.
It requires massive investment. Toxicological testing, efficacy studies for functional claims, meticulous documentation, specialized legal teams. Compliance is a huge undertaking. And this regulatory complexity acts as another significant structural barrier to entry.
Favoring the big guys again?
Exactly. It makes it incredibly difficult for smaller, regional players to compete globally. It inherently favors large incumbents like Symrise, Givaudan, IFF, DS Firmenich, who have the global infrastructure and the specialized knowledge to handle it effectively. They have the resources.
And this brings us right back to Symrise's key strategic response to all this change, the One Symrise program. It sounds like their way of gearing up for this new reality.
Precisely. It's their blueprint for navigating this shifting landscape and ensuring they stay competitive.
Okay, let's pivot to the numbers then. Symrise has this reputation for a strong financial track record, but they've faced challenges recently, like pretty much everyone else.
Indeed. Looking at their top line, their revenue growth has been really consistent and quite robust over the past decade. Sales grew from $2.6 billion back in 2015 to about $5.0 billion in 2024. That's a compound annual growth rate, CAGR, of roughly 7.5%.
Which is well above that market growth rate of 3-4% you mentioned.
Exactly. That's the key point. Organically, they've consistently grown faster than the market. For instance, 8.8% organic growth in 2018, 8.7% in 2024. Shows they're gaining share.
And their long-term target is even higher.
Their ambition is 5-7% organic growth long-term. However, yes, we have seen some moderation lately. Organic growth cooled to 3.1% in the first half of 2025. And that led management to revise their full year 2025 guidance down slightly to a range of 3-5%, acknowledging a softer demand environment globally.
Okay, so top line growth is solid historically, but moderating a bit now. What about profitability? Those must have taken a hit during the recent inflationary period.
Profitability definitely saw an evolution, and yes, it was put to the test. Historically, Symrise has maintained really high and stable profitability. Their EBITDA margins, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a key measure of core operational profit, typically stayed within their target range of 20-23%.
Which reflects that pricing power and sticky business.
Exactly. But during that post-pandemic inflation surge, particularly 2022 and 2023, profitability definitely came under significant pressure. Their EBITDA margins squeezed down to 20.0% in 2022, and then further to 19.1% in 2023.
What was driving that compression?
Primarily, it was unprecedented cost inflation. Soaring prices for key raw materials, energy skyrocketing, logistics costs going through the roof, coupled with those broader supply chain issues, it really squeezed margins hard.
A tough couple of years on the cost side then, but what about more recently? Have they managed to bounce back?
They've shown a really strong and quite rapid recovery on the margin front. The EBITDA margin bounced back to 20.7% in 2024. And that positive momentum carried right into the first half of 2025. In H1 2025, the margin actually expanded by a notable 100 basis points compared to the previous year, reaching 21.7%, back firmly in their target corridor.
Wow, 100 basis points is a significant jump. How did they achieve that?
It wasn't accidental. It was driven by several factors. Successful pricing actions finally catching up with cost inflation, a favorable product mix, maybe selling more high-value solutions, and crucially, the early benefits starting to flow from their One Symrise efficiency program.
Ah, the One Symrise program kicking in.
Yes. We also saw their gross profit margin improve significantly, up 250 basis points in H1 2025 to 41.4%. That shows better control over their core production costs, too.
That strong margin recovery, even while sales growth is moderating a bit, that signals a real focus on profitability, on operational discipline.
Absolutely. It's what management calls value-led growth.
Yeah.
Even though they lowered the 2025 sales forecast slightly, they actually raised the EBITDA margin target for the year to around 21.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Clear signal, profitability over sheer volume in this softer demand environment.
And you mentioned much of that discipline stems from this One Symrise program. Can you unpack that a bit more? You said it's a fundamental rewiring, not just cost cutting.
It really is more fundamental than just trimming costs. Think of it as moving Symrise from being a collection of very strong specialized divisions to becoming a truly integrated single powerhouse.
Hmm.
One Symrise is this multifaceted program designed to leverage their global scale much more effectively, drive performance across the board, and adapt to that evolving competitive landscape we talked about.
Competing with the new giants like DS and Firmenet.
Exactly. As the industry consolidates, Symrise's ability to seamlessly combine the expertise of its different parts, scent and care, with taste. Nutrition and health isn't just an opportunity anymore, it's a strategic necessity. One Symrise is their blueprint for achieving that deeper integration, making them more agile, more efficient, and future-proofing the business. It's about maximizing their collective capabilities.
Okay, and it's built around three key pillars, right? Let's start with the first one, the growth pillar.
Correct. The first is the growth pillar. This is all about capturing new opportunities, especially in high-growth adjacent areas, by leveraging knowledge across those divisions. A prime example they talk about is their One Care concept.
One Care.
Yeah. This initiative aims to combine, say, the scientific expertise from scent and care, maybe in skin biology or cosmetic actives, with the capabilities from taste, nutrition, and health, like probiotics or functional nutrition expertise.
To create what?
To create truly holistic health and beauty solutions. Things like beauty from within products. Imagine a drink that tastes great, but also demonstrably improves skin elasticity based on ingredients from both sides. Or a supplement supporting gut health, which in turn improves skin appearance.
I see. Bringing previously separate knowledge together for entirely new product types.
Exactly. Creating new offerings, getting to market faster in these emerging high-value spaces. It really accelerates their innovation.
Okay, that's growth. Then there's the efficiency pillar. This sounds more like traditional cost savings, but how is it working?
The efficiency pillar is definitely designed to deliver significant financial benefits, yes, by optimizing their global scale and operations. It targets substantial cost savings through things like smarter global procurement, using their massive purchasing power to get better deals on raw materials worldwide, also streamlining asset management, boosting productivity across their factories and supply chains.
And is it delivering tangible results?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The program is proving very effective. It delivered a remarkable $50 million in savings in 2024 alone.
50 million euros. That's significant.
And they're targeting another 40 million in savings for 2025. These savings are a direct contributor to that strong margin recovery we just saw. Real world impact on the bottom line.
Okay. Growth, efficiency. And the third is the portfolio pillar. What's the focus here? Selling off bits.
Precisely. The portfolio pillar focuses on actively managing their business mix, sharpening their focus on activities that are high margin and, importantly, low capital intensity.
So getting rid of businesses that soak up too much capital for lower returns.
Exactly. It involves a very disciplined approach to capital allocation, making sure resources go where they generate the highest returns and best fit the long-term strategy. We've seen this in action recently. They announced strategic reviews or plan sales for businesses like their terpene ingredients unit and their specialized aquafeed business.
Terpenes? Those are aroma compounds, right? Why exit that?
Terpenes are widely used, yes. But certain parts of that business can be more commodity-like or require higher capital investment for perhaps lower margins compared to their core proprietary fragrance and flavor solutions. So exiting allows them to focus resources on higher value areas. Same logic applies to the aquafeed business.
So refining the portfolio, concentrating on core strengths, making the overall business more robust and agile.
That's the goal, maximizing returns on capital. Now, despite all these strengths and the One Symrise program, it's important to remember they have faced some pretty significant headwinds, especially from 2022 through 2024. These impacted both growth and profitability. The biggest factor, as we touched on, for that margin squeeze was the unprecedented raw material and cost inflation.
Right. Energy, logistics, ingredients, everything went up.
Everything. They use about 10,000 different raw materials. Many companies grappled with this, but for Symrise, with such a diverse input base, it was intense. Soaring prices, sometimes double or triple digits for key commodities. They had to absorb a lot before pricing actions could fully compensate.
And it wasn't just costs, right? The whole supply chain was chaotic after the pandemic.
That's absolutely right. The post-pandemic period brought huge supply chain disruptions. Initially, that led many of their customers to build up big safety stocks, fearing shortages.
Panic buying, basically.
Kind of, at an industrial level. But then, as those disruptions eased, the industry swung the other way, into a period of inventory normalization, or destocking.
Meaning customers used up what they already had instead of ordering new stuff.
Exactly. They worked through their existing stockpiles. This temporarily slowed down demand for Symrise's ingredients. Even in the first half of 2025, Symrise mentioned that ongoing market-wide inventory normalization was still a factor, particularly hitting their aroma molecules division.
Okay, so inflation and inventory swings. What else?
Well, there was also a general economic slowdown and shifting demand patterns. Management explicitly cited a more challenging global demand environment and cautious consumer sentiment as key reasons for moderating that 2025 sales guidance. But this slowdown wasn't uniform across their business. A particular pain point has been their pet food division.
Ah, yes. You mentioned that was flat in H1 2025. Why the weakness there? It's usually a growth area.
It has been a high growth engine, yes. But seeing flat organic sales was a significant drag on the whole taste, nutrition, and health segment, and a key factor in the revised guidance. The reasons are likely complex. It could be a normalization after the unsustainable boom in pet adoptions during the pandemic, maybe consumers trading down to cheaper private label pet foods due to inflation, or it could be specific inventory corrections at major pet food manufacturers who are Symrise clients.
So its recovery is pretty critical for their near-term growth picture.
Very critical. And then, as a global company reporting in euros, currency fluctuations are a constant factor too.
Headwinds from FX.
Yes. In the first half of 2025 alone, negative foreign exchange effects cut the reported revenue by $81 million, mainly due to currencies like the U.S. dollar and others weakening against the euro. This can mask underlying organic growth.
Right, eats into the recorded numbers.
And sometimes there are other accounting things, like adjustments for hyperinflation in certain markets, which can also obscure the true operational performance.
And finally, any regulatory issues. You mentioned the industry concentration attracts scrutiny.
Yes, there's always regulatory scrutiny. In May 2025, Symrise announced that the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, the CMA, had closed an investigation into the company regarding potential anti-competitive grievance.
Closed positively, though.
Yes, the closure was positive for Symrise. But the investigation itself highlights the persistent regulatory risks in this highly concentrated industry. The big players are always under the microscope.
Okay, so despite those headwinds, let's dive a bit deeper into how the segments are actually performing now, especially in that first half of 2025. You mentioned diverging trends.
Yes, the H1 2025 numbers really paint an interesting picture of shifting consumer behavior. The taste, nutrition, and health TNNH segment showed pretty resilient performance overall despite those challenges. It delivered 3.3% organic growth. And impressively, it expanded its EBITDA margin by 120 basis points to a very strong 23.3%.
Wow, 23.3% margin is very healthy. It shows their pricing power.
It really underscores the segment's underlying profitability and the effectiveness of their cost control and pricing strategies.
But you said it wasn't uniform within TNNH, a mixed bag.
That's right. It was really a tale of two distinct stories inside TNNH. The food and beverage part performed very strongly. Mid-single-digit growth overall, but double-digit growth specifically in beverages.
So people are still buying drinks?
Seems so. Points to robust, resilient consumer demand for those at-home consumption products where taste and convenience matter a lot. But in stark contrast, the pet food division, as we discussed, recorded flat organic sales. That acted as a notable drag on the segment's overall growth.
And that weakness was key to the revised company guidance.
Exactly. Strategically, TNH is clearly focusing on portfolio optimization to boost profitability further. We see that with the recent sale of the lower-margin beverage training business and the planned exit from Aquafeet, sharpening the focus on higher-margin growth areas.
Okay. And what about the scent and care S&C segment? How did it fare amidst these shifting consumer winds?
The S&C segment posted organic growth of 2.9% in H1 2025, also respectable. And its EBITDA margin improved, too, by a solid 90 basis points, reaching 19.2%.
So margin improvement there as well? What was the standout?
Within S&C, the definite standout was the fragrance division. It delivered strong growth across the board, but particularly double-digit gains in the high-margin fine fragrances business.
Luxury perfumes bouncing back.
Seems so, benefiting significantly from the rebound in social activities, travel, people going out more, dressing up, buying perfume.
Makes sense.
The Aroma Molecules division also returned to positive growth, which suggests that customer destocking we talked about is starting to ease up.
Good news there. Any areas of weakness in S&C?
The main offset was lower sales in the cosmetic ingredients division. But that was largely due to facing a really tough comparison against an exceptionally strong prior year.
What drove the strength last year?
Huge demand for sun protection products as global travel properly resumed post-pandemic. So a normalization effect there.
And strategically, what are S&C's priorities?
Driving premiumization in fine fragrances, using AI in fragrance creation to speed things up, and capitalizing on the huge clean beauty trend in cosmetic ingredients. And that ongoing strategic review of their terpene business also fits the portfolio optimization theme. You know, this diverging performance across the segments, strength in beverages and fine fragrances versus softness in pet food and some cosmetic areas, it really shows what some analysts call a barbell effect in post-pandemic consumer spending.
A barbell effect, like weights at either end.
Exactly. Imagine a weightlifter's barbell. Heavy weights at both ends, not much in the middle. Here, it means we're seeing strong consumer spending on both affordable daily essentials like beverages and on premium discretionary items like luxury perfumes.
Well, the middle ground, maybe things that boom during lockdowns, is softer.
Precisely. Categories that surged during the pandemic, like maybe certain pet foods or some cosmetic items bought for home use, are now either normalizing back to trend or seeing consumers trade down to save money.
That's a really insightful way to look at it. And it highlights the value of Symrise having such a diverse portfolio.
Absolutely. Strength in some areas can offset temporary weakness in others. It provides overall corporate resilience. It's a testament to their broad product mix.
Okay, beyond those segment specifics, what are the bigger ongoing organic growth drivers that Symrise seems well positioned to capture long term?
Well, a major one is definitely health and wellness. This growing global consumer focus on holistic health is directly driving demand for functional foods and beverages, things offering specific benefits like immunity support, digestive health, better nutrition.
Which is a huge tailwind for the TNNH segment.
A significant tailwind, yes. Another powerful structural driver across both food and cosmetics is the trend towards natural and clean label.
People reading labels, wanting transparency.
Exactly. Demanding transparency about ingredients, preferring natural alternatives. And this plays directly to Symrise's core strengths, especially that strategic backward integration into natural raw materials. They can provide that verifiable, sustainable supply chain story.
Which clients increasingly demand.
Need, yes. And finally, premiumization is still a key driver in many areas. Consumers are often willing to pay more for higher quality, value-added products that offer a superior experience. We see it in pet food, the humanization trend driving demand for premium nutrition, and obviously in fine fragrances, where brand, exclusivity, and quality are paramount.
And beyond the ingredients themselves, Symrise is also pushing hard on innovation and digitalization, aren't they? How are they using tech to stay ahead?
They really are at the forefront here, integrating technology deeply into their creative and operational processes. For example, they've developed SymVision AI. It's an artificial intelligence platform they use to analyze huge amounts of consumer data, social media trends, market insights, all to predict emerging flavor and fragrance trends.
So using AI to anticipate what consumers will want next?
Exactly. It helps them develop more targeted, more successful product concepts and potentially shorten those long development cycles.
Interesting. What else?
Then there's Digiscent. This is a sophisticated digital tool that lets their perfumers and even clients virtually explore and combine elements from Symrise's vast fragrance library in an immersive environment.
So creating scents digitally.
Exploring combinations, speeding up the creative process, making it more collaborative, allowing for rapid virtual prototyping without needing lots of physical samples initially. Very efficient.
And you mentioned sustainability integration too.
Yes, the Houston program.
Yeah.
This is a group-wide digital dashboard. It allows them to precisely track the carbon footprint and water footprint of their products and operations across their whole global network.
So embedding sustainability metrics right into business decisions.
Exactly. Integrating sustainability directly into R&D, into operations, ensuring environmental factors are considered right from the start of the product life cycle.
Which brings us back to that point. Sustainability isn't just a CSR thing for Symrise. It sounds like a core part of their competitive advantage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's deeply embedded in their strategy and business model, from sourcing raw materials in Madagascar all the way through production and product development. It's not just greenwashing.
And their big clients demand it.
Increasingly, yes. Major FMCG clients have their own ambitious sustainability targets, driven by consumers and regulators. They require their key suppliers to demonstrate real commitment to responsible practices, transparency, ethical sourcing.
And Symrise can deliver that proof.
Their leadership is externally validated. They get top-tier ratings from respected organizations like CDP. They're on the A-list for both climate and water impact. And they have gold status from EcoVadis for sustainability performance.
That external validation must be powerful.
It's a key differentiator. It actively helps them win and retain business with strategic customers. When a client needs a traceable, sustainably sourced ingredient, Symrise has the verifiable credentials. It's good for the planet, yes, but it's profoundly good for their business too. Builds trust and partnership.
Okay, so when we look at Symrise, it definitely comes across as a high-quality business with these deep competitive advantages. How does that translate into its valuation in the stock market? Does the market recognize this quality?
It absolutely does, generally speaking. Symrise consistently commands a premium valuation compared to the broader market, and even relative to some of its direct competitors. This reflects its status as, you know, a high-quality, defensive growth company operating in what's seen as a structurally attractive industry.
What kind of metrics are we talking about?
Well, looking at recent figures, the stock trades at a price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio of around 22 times earnings, and a price-to-book, or PB, ratio of about 3.0 times. These are generally higher than many other industrial companies.
Reflecting that predictable earnings stream and strong position.
Exactly. Predictable earnings, strong competitive position. Consistent innovation investors tend to pay a premium for that combination.
And how does that valuation stack up against its closest peers, those other big four players we discussed? Is there a pecking order?
In this kind of oligopoly, relative valuation is really important. And yes, there's a pretty clear pecking order, mostly based on scale, stability, and growth prospects. Symrise is most often benchmarked against Givaudan, the industry leader. Givaudan consistently trades at the highest multiples in the sector, for example. Its enterprise value to EBITDA ratio, EVEBITDA, is often around 19.3x. That reflects their superior scale and long track record.
Okay, so Givaudan at the top. How about IFF?
Symrise typically trades at a significant premium to IFF. IFF's valuation has been quite compressed recently, trading at an EVEBITDA around 12.5x. That's largely due to those challenges we mentioned with integrating the massive DuPont N&B acquisition, higher debt, integration headwinds. It creates uncertainty.
Makes sense. And the new Diaz-Firmenich?
The comparison with Diaz-Firmenich is still evolving as the market figures out the synergies and execution of that huge merger. Currently, Symrise trades at a slight premium on an EBITDA basis, maybe 12.0x for Symrise versus 11.8x for Diaz-Firmenich.
Why the slight premium for Symrise there?
It likely reflects Symrise's consistently higher and perhaps more stable historical margins, and maybe a perception of a smoother operational picture compared to the complexities of integrating DSM and Firmenich right now.
That's a very clear breakdown. So what are the key underlying factors investors are really looking at that drive that premium valuation for Symrise specifically?
Several key factors really underpin it. First, their consistent above-market organic growth. That demonstrated ability to grow faster than the industry is something investors highly value. It shows market share gains and effective strategy execution.
Right, outperforming the market.
Second, their high and stable profitability. We talked about the defensive nature of their end markets. Food, beverages, personal care are non-cyclical. Combined with their strong competitive position, this allows for those high, predictable EBITDA margins, which means reliable earnings for investors.
Stability is valuable.
Very. Third, they show a strong return on invested capital, or ROIC. Currently around 8.65%. This indicates they're using their capital base efficiently to generate attractive returns. Speaks to good management and discipline.
Efficient use of capital.
And finally, their commitment to shareholder returns is a big plus for many investors. They have this exceptional track record, 15 consecutive years of dividend increases.
15 years straight. Wow.
Yes, and they do it with a conservative payout ratio, around 33% of earnings. This leaves a substantial cushion and plenty of room for future increases. It signals long-term financial health and a very shareholder-friendly approach.
So all of this points to Symrise having a very strong competitive moat, right? Those structural advantages protecting its business. Can you break down the specific elements of that moat?
Absolutely. Symrise's long-term success is definitely protected by a wide and pretty durable competitive moat built on several key pillars. First, you have significant intangible assets. We're talking decades of accumulated proprietary knowledge in flavor and fragrance formulation, deep scientific understanding combined with, frankly, artistic creativity.
Their secret recipes.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Plus, their world-class R&D organization constantly innovating, and that vast, unique library of tens of thousands of scents and tastes. You just can't easily replicate that intellectual property.
Okay, intangibles. What else?
Second, as we discussed in detail, those high switching costs. The Corelist system, embedding their ingredients deeply into a client's product for its whole life, creates exceptionally high barriers to switching. It's not just logistical hassle. It's a fundamental brand risk for the client. That ensures revenue stability for Symrise.
The stickiness factor again.
Exactly. Third is their scale and global footprint. Their ability to serve the world's biggest consumer brands with globally consistent solutions, yet also tailor them locally. Operating in over 100 locations, serving 150 plus countries. That's a scale advantage. Smaller competitors just can't match. They can handle the complexity of multinational clients.
A global reach.
And fourth, and this is increasingly vital, is their backward integration. This is a unique and growing competitive advantage. It secures raw material supply, yes, mitigating risks and volatility. But crucially, it provides those traceability and sustainability credentials that are now table stakes for doing business with leading global customers. That deep control from farm to factory is very hard to replicate.
So intangible, switching costs, scale, and backward integration, that's a powerful combination.
A very powerful moat. And it's supported by strong free cash flow generation, which is really the lifeblood of the business. Yeah. Management has a clear long-term target. Deliver business free cash flow, or BFCF, greater than 14% of sales.
And achieving that allows them to.
It's fundamental to their ability to self-fund growth, whether that's capital expenditures, CapEx for new factories or R&D labs, or making strategic M&A deals, while also supporting that progressive dividend policy we mentioned.
And their debt levels are manageable.
Yes. Their current leverage ratio net debt to EBITDA was 2.4x in the first half of 2025. That's comfortably within their target range of 2.0x to 2.5x. So they have healthy financial flexibility to pursue opportunities without taking on excessive risk.
Okay, now even the strongest companies face risks. It's important we cover those too. What are the key potential headwinds or risk factors Symrise navigates?
Well, a major one inherent to their business is raw material volatility. They use around 10,000 different materials. Mm-hmm. Many are agricultural products, so they're highly susceptible to price swings driven by weather, crop yields, geopolitics, pests, you name it.
Even with backward integration.
Backward integration mitigates it, especially for key materials like vanilla, but it doesn't eliminate it. A major drought affecting citrus crops or a sudden surge in a particular spice price can still impact their input costs and potentially margins. Requires very agile pricing.
Okay, raw materials, what else?
Customer concentration. While they serve over 6,000 customers, a significant chunk of their revenue comes from a concentrated group of very large global FMCG companies.
So losing one big client would hurt.
The loss of a key customer, or even just a major strategic shift in their sourcing strategy, could certainly have a material impact on Symrise's revenue and profitability. They work hard to maintain those relationships, obviously.
And the competition itself, those big rivals aren't standing still.
Exactly. Competitive threats are very real. The F&F industry is intensely competitive, and that recent consolidation has created even larger, more powerful rivals like DSM Firmenich with deeply integrated capabilities. A failure by Symrise to innovate fast enough or to match the integrated solution offerings of these peers is a key strategic risk. They had to constantly prove their value.
Any risks related to acquisitions?
Yes, M&A integration risk. While Symrise has a good track record, any future large-scale M&A always carries inherent execution risks. Bringing together different company cultures, IT systems, product portfolios, it's always complex.
Yeah.
And as a global company, currency exposure is significant. We saw that $81 million revenue hit in H1 2025 from FX. Fluctuations between the euro and other major currencies like the dollar or emerging market currencies can materially impact their reported financials.
A constant challenge for multinationals.
It is. Lastly, intellectual property protection is absolutely paramount. Those formulations for their 35,000 products are their core competitive asset, representing huge investment. Protecting this IP through patents, trademarks, trade secrets is critical to maintaining their edge.
Okay, so there are definitely risks to watch. But despite those, what's the overall long-term investment thesis for Symrise? Why do many see it as such a robust long-term prospect?
The long-term case really rests on its position as a high-quality, defensive growth compounder with that strong moat and disciplined management. It's a defensive growth compounder because fundamentally it operates in those non-cyclical end markets, food, drinks, personal care. Demand stays resilient through economic cycles.
People always need to eat and wash.
Pretty much. Plus, they are structurally aligned with powerful long-term growth trends. An aging global population needing health and nutrition solutions. A growing middle class and emerging markets demanding more sophisticated products. And that overarching consumer preference for natural, sustainable, and premium goods all play into Symrise's strengths. Then there's their strong market position and consistent share gains. Being a top four player in a high barrier industry gives them inherent advantages. And their business model, focused on innovation and deep client partnerships, has consistently let them grow faster than the market.
Proven ability to execute.
Yes. And crucially, the management quality and disciplined capital allocation stand out. They've shown a clear, consistent long-term strategy. Their approach to deploying cash flow is balanced investing in organic growth, R&D, CapEx, making smart M&A deals, and rewarding shareholders with that growing dividend. The proactive One Symrise program also shows adaptability.
Signals forward-thinking leadership.
I think so. And finally, their ESG leadership is a clear business driver. We talked about this. Sustainability isn't separate. It's integrated. It enhances their competitive position with clients, mitigates long-term risks, and strengthens their global license to operate. It's a strategic asset.
So putting it all together.
In conclusion, Symrise appears to be a resilient, high-quality business with multiple durable competitive advantages deeply embedded in the value chain of products we use every day. The key question, I think, for you, the listener, is whether its ongoing execution, particularly of the One Symrise strategy in this tougher competitive field and its current premium valuation, properly reflect its potential to continue compounding that growth reliably over the long term.
So there you have it. Symrise isn't just about making things smell or taste good, is it? They're strategically positioned right at the intersection of huge consumer trends, deep science, and these incredibly complex global supply chains. Operating with this quiet but really powerful influence on our daily lives, on our choices, often in ways we don't even realize.
And here's a final thought. As our world increasingly values transparency, personalization, and those functional benefits alongside just sensory pleasure, how much more will we as consumers, consciously or unconsciously, value these hidden architects like Symrise? The ones who can actually deliver precisely on all those demands, starting from a plant in the ground all the way to our shopping baskets. And, maybe more intriguingly, what completely new sensory experiences might they be cooking up in their labs right now that we can't even imagine? What will be the defining tastes and smells of tomorrow's most beloved products?
It certainly makes you think differently about that morning coffee scent or the taste of your favorite snack, doesn't it? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Symrise AG. We really encourage you to keep exploring the unseen forces that shape our world.